That was where the Astralis wrecking Thorin's career began, actually, because before that tournament, I mean, they were TSM at the time. Before that tournament, I said, Astralis, TSM's going to win this war, and Device is the best player in the world, And then, yeah, it's pretty hard. I can't lie, it's pretty hard when you lost that quarterfinal match. That is, the thing is, though, okay, a lot of the other losses that you had were the close losses. What makes that one so bizarre to me is you just got completely stomped all the time on both maps, like you're never even in the game.
And this is where I burnt my fingers. I picked Train against
You were
NIP.
pretty good on Train though, right?
I
And
was,
they weren't
but
that good.
we were in that team. And the reason I really forced that pick, I really wanted to play NIP and Train since they didn't play that much. And we just beat Fnatic and
Yeah.
VP 2 weeks before. But as far as I remember, my team wasn't so comfortable playing Train.
Okay.
And I guess we came into a map V2 where we maybe have picked wrong, or I didn't listen to my team, but I really thought we had a stats right. If you look at all the matches we had on Train and look at that match on Train, we like won 7 Train matches in a row, and I really thought we were the best Train team in the world. Basically, we just didn't show up. So I think all in all, that was a very heartbreaking for everyone in the team. And I remember the bus trip home for that from that arena. I have never been in a so bad funeral mood for the whole evening. It's like you could really see how it got to players that tournament compared to others.
So there was a comment you made actually at, when they did the promos for the E-League Major, and I know on those promos, they do ask people like 50 questions until they get a good line, essentially. And so it's not like that's what the player was literally thinking on the bus there. They do keep asking. That's just the way the production works now. But
Know.
your line was what you just said now. You just said it's about creating a legacy, and this is actually a good storyline I thought when you said it, because the difference is, if you won the major now, the story wouldn't be like it was with Astralis. Like, they were the guys that were always good enough and they were so close and they didn't win. If anything, I think if you won the major with FaZe, it would actually impress people more than if you'd won it with Astralis, because they'd be like, he won after he was kicked out and he had to go to an international team. I already gave you that stat there. No international team, like mixed team, ever won the major. If anything, people would give you more credit as an in-game leader than you probably if you were in a team with Device and Zipnix. Do you agree?
That's also one of the reasons why I'm very motivated, and I actually think I'm a better caller now than I was in Astralis. That I really have the tools now. I have everything set for personally. I have very, very high motivation personally for myself right now to win the major or just prove people wrong that you can have a international team with different superstars as long as you have the right set of roles for every player. And just knowing that FaZe we're not even making top eights really since for a whole year since the joint phase, and coming in and instantly we get a top four or two top fours in a row, Oakland and all that kind of stuff. I just think that is good motivation and just makes me strive and make that's what's gonna make me gonna play CS every day until I finally reach that level where I can say, okay, I was in different teams, I went with different lineups, so maybe I was good at it, maybe I wasn't. Because if you're only gonna in-game lead for one good team in your whole career, you actually don't know if just the players made you good.
Yeah.
If you change to another team and you're able to make a broken car drive again and suddenly be a supercar, then you must have some credit or some legacy in your name that you actually play with different players in your whole career and able to make two lineups win, even though it's two completely different lineups and two different teams.
Do you actually like set up mind games in practice? Like, do you like? I know Kerrigan, you said sometimes you'll call in practice and then go into a match and you'll call like a 180 of the style that you played against them. Do you notice teams setting that kind of stuff up? Like a team will practice against you on like maps and be very execute heavy, and then come to the match time, they're just going for contact plays and just going for duels. Is this like a mind game that persists in the professional scene throughout every facet of practice matches?
I hope so because that's what I'm doing. If I know that I'm playing specific team who wants to practice specific map and we don't need it because I know we're probably gonna play against this team or gonna play them in Pro League in 1 week or play the next epicenter
Yeah.
against them. If they wanna play that map and they need that map, you can't really do anything. Then you pick your map and then you play what you wanna train on that another pick. But if they play that map, I'll just keep doing old strats or keep rushing or play default 15 times. And I think you feel that often as well in practice that some teams are just playing to playing that map and not really show anything because they're probably a tournament coming up in 1 week. So I feel that at least, and I hope other teams feel that else there's something wrong.
Yeah, I think we feel it as well that some teams doesn't run that tactics. And if I, let's say we practice against FaZe 2 weeks before E-League Premier or something, and I find something that we can explode, I would never use it in practice. I would always write it down after the game, and then we can use it against them when we get to the event.
And that's why you have an analyzer on the coach.
Yeah.
I have one extra guy who's just writing down all the time so the game doesn't need to write something down.
Exactly.
For you, that's got to be like the most softball question ever, since, as I've mentioned, every interview with Carrigan's like, oh, well, see that one round we won? Yeah, I knew he was going to do that. And then I actually tricked him into doing the next round. Like, so what is it like for your teams? Like, do you actually, how much do you think is based on like tendencies of the opponent? How much is just you do what you think is best for your team?
I think every player of my team, at least, I think, have been playing all these players for a long time, so they know how to react, and they know how to react themselves in specific situations. So I don't know if they look for the tendencies of different players, but one tendency I've paid attention to the last 8 times played overpass against SK is that Furry has 30 frags and he pushed top mid, but I still don't know how to shut him down. So that is one thing.
Yeah.
You need
that's
to
track quite fair.
Yeah, you
that's
need
why
to
I don't. That's why I feel like you're being too harsh on yourself. Where you're like, I tried to anti-strat SK. Like, there isn't really an anti-strat. Like, when someone just runs out of the bathrooms and kills 3 people, isn't like that's too good.
But you know when you play SK, that first gonna push, and you don't really notice. You don't really need to say anything to the team because everybody knows it. So there's some tendencies that everybody knows on the team, and you just say it one time, and they all remember how many times you lost practice or stuff like this. But like Liv said, that is a good thing to write down if you pay attention to it and have time to write down and all remember it. But practice is practice still. You don't know how people under high pressure situation with crowd and need to diffuse. There's so many things coming in besides having that practice where you can write down. He does this 5 times out of 5 times in practice.
If we talk about some other teams, obviously we've referenced them already. Like the team that you guys were the kryptonite of, even before you were as good as them in the rankings, was Evil Geniuses. So even when this team was actually pretty good and when they had Daps even as an in-game leader, like you guys, every time you faced them, somehow it just worked out for you. Like what do you like about playing that team?
I think we're playing kind of the same style, but we're just better at it. It sounds super arrogant to say it like that, but I just feel like Kerrigan has the edge there. Like when you take Stanislaw and Kerrigan, the way they play is so similar, but Kerrigan is just better at it, you know? And because, I mean, like the skill on the both teams is super high. So, but I don't know why it is we just beat them. It's just like, yeah, I think it's just like a kryptonite, like you say, like it's just work, like the way we play and the way they play, it just fits us so well.
I mean, I would speculate, like, one of the things, if anyone knows the famous saying from, like, boxing and MMA that styles make fights, what they mean by that usually is that you want different styles if you want a really good fight. Because what happens, like, famously, is if you have two really good boxers, but one of them is 10% better than the other one, he might just wreck the other guy because he might just control him with the jab or something, or he might just have, like, a counter. And similarly, if you ever watch two wrestlers fight in MMA, it's probably famously the worst match to watch because one of them just dominates the other. It's like watching a Quake match. One guy just wrecks the other guy completely, and then the other guy's actually good, but you don't get to see it in the fight. So I would say in this scenario, it makes sense. Like, I would agree. Listen, I know in terms of the players, EG might think some of their players are better, but if we're talking about in-game leaders who dictate the style, I do think Carrigan's a better in-game leader than Stanislaw. It's no diss to Stanislaw. Carrigan's like a Hall of Fame type player.
Stanislaw's good, of course. Carrigan is just that better, you know?
I mean, I'll give you an analogy. If everyone knows who's followed Carrigan's career, when he was, because one of the weird things about him is usually when you're a guy who's had the career he has in terms of championships, you just stay in one team the whole time, and it's the other players that switch around you. You know, you don't get kicked out the team, so it's actually crazy that how successful he's been. But then these teams that he has success in kick him. But one of the reasons they kick him is because since his style is based so much around believing in his reads and doing what he says, sometimes in the moment they always, the phrase always is like, "Oh, they lost faith in me," or like they stopped believing in my calls. And then crucially, they don't kick him immediately. You know, it's in either these teams, it's like the player starts trying to have more and more input, like, well, maybe we should do it this way, or maybe I'd rather do this. And so what you do in that sense is, if you're going to have Carrigan, you've got to go all in on what he wants to do. That's his strength. Like, if you don't, you're just making him a less effective leader, and as a team you're just less effective overall. So if you look in these teams here, I think the reason why that match is so key is because when you do some of the comebacks you did this year, and you do that comeback in particular, where it did look like the tournament was over for you, like they looked like they were going to close it somehow. They were on like CT side of Inferno, like surely it's going to happen. So in that scenario, if you do a monster comeback and you have to win all these T rounds, and crucially, I noticed this when we got to Epicenter, there would be games like this where there would be a like maybe 6 or 7 rounds in a row where all of a sudden you're not winning any rounds. The other team wins all the rounds, but then Carrigan would make a read where he'd like crack something like, right, but this would work now. And then that would work like for 5 rounds in a row and you'd be right back in the match. Like yeah. When you can do that even a few times and win a few big matches, now the young player thinks, right, well, even if we're losing, he's going to figure it out. And if he does, it's the right move. If that doesn't work though, they're not going to buy in. They're not going to believe it.
Fuck Kerrigan's tactics. I think the funniest thing I notice about Kerrigan, actually, I don't mean that like I think they're bad, but just the funniest thing about Kerrigan as a player that I notice is he has this uncanny ability to have some of the most incredible clutches in weird moments, like some kind of crazy 1v3 pistol round or some kind of crazy like 1v3 in a gun round when they're about to be reset. He, for whatever reason, can go an entire, you can go 20 rounds with 4 kills, and then he'll just win like some ridiculous clutch that he has no business winning. And I don't understand what it is about his playstyle that allows him to do it, but I notice it very, very frequently.
Then you go to IEM Cologne. By the way, this might be the best series of Counter-Strike ever played. This is where the Na'Vi team with Sun Dai Young, who'd obviously won Blast previously, played against FaZe, and this was the last title they won in the 2022. And this obviously was a key notch on the Grand Slam. And it was a 3-2, and it was an incredibly close series. It was really epic. This was a really special series. And by the way, this is the Na'Vi show, not with Boomich, where the core, you still have Simple, Bait, Electronic. This is the core with Bait Kutchum that won the major the previous year. Another of the all-time great cores that is losing in a best-of-5 LAN final to Kerrigan. And then, of course, we come to the last one, the most recent one, ESL Pro League Season 17. And, of course, in the final, they played Cloud9, kind of an ominous opponent, because without a big crowd, obviously Cloud9 tend to perform it better. Then again, maybe in pressure matches they don't, but obviously famously it'd been a really back and forth matchup between these two teams through the last year or so. And at this point in time, a lot of people wondered maybe Cloud9 is the one that can beat them and deny them, but they didn't. FaZe won. They won the Grand Slam 3-1. They could actually, by the way, have won 3-0, but there was a key turnaround from Cloud9, and obviously some of the Cloud9 players did frag out at times, like Axile. So yeah, the last 8 series of his career, Kerrigan won best-of-5. That is very impressive as a streak, by the way. And like I say, you look at some of the teams he's beating, these are some of the best teams and players to ever play Counter-Strike. So it just shows how interesting it is, how you have a narrative that's set and might even be accurate at the time relative to who you are, who you're playing, how the game's going, the dynamics. But it can change, especially when we're talking about the greats of all time. They can go to levels that the rest of us can't, that normal, good, and even very good players can't. They can change their careers by force of will, by applying their skill, by understanding the game, by evolving what they're doing, by learning from their mistakes. So I think this is one of the all-time great turnarounds. The end, after all the evolution and change and all the new people and the level rising, at the end, when you win at the end, like yours is like less meaningful than somebody who just won really early and then did fuck all after. No, it's the other way around, moron. It's the other way around. It's way harder to do it the way Kerrigan did, to stay on top all those years battling for the top and then get to the very top at the end. There's no excuse you can have against him, mate. So the point is, he's had all those years of reinventing, revising his play, his style, how he works with teammates. I've always thought, I'll just say it straight up, if we're talking about just who is the best at the role, not accomplishments, not what they did with like how many titles they won, not like where they were ranked by people. You just look at who plays the position best. In the same way as I think the best quarterback ever in the NFL is Peyton Manning by how he plays the position. I think Kerrigan is the best in-game leader ever. These are the two guys that you could just give any group of players and they'd make it work. And they'd only make it work, they'd probably be pretty good, as Kerrigan showed with Mouse. Like, I think it's just been shown right there. I mean, remember, as I said, he chucked out Olof, put in Rops, and they became the best team in the world. The best team in the world. Before that, they were like, what, the 8th best team in the world? This guy is just unbelievable. I mean, look what he's done to people like Twists and the renaissance of his career. If you took you until now to go, yeah, actually, Kerrigan is an all-time great and GOAT contender, then you don't know that he's an all-time great and GOAT contender. You just saw a trophy get lifted and your brain goes, now I will say it. Because you apparently weren't watching. You don't have the cognitive skills to understand what he was doing. You don't have the eye test to see what he was doing all those years. I don't need him to lift the trophy to know that. I've seen him play his whole career. This just essentially means for idiots, it cements and confirms it. It was always the case for me. That's why I've doubled down all those years. He's like, hey, did your career lose it? Well, how'd it work out now? How's my choking now, dickhead? How's my loser now, dickhead? Where's your cologne now, dickhead? Where's your international lineup now, dickhead? Where's your major and Grand Slam without a world number one contender or GOAT contender? Dickhead. Exactly. He does have, in my opinion, a very unique but a very shrewd approach to the map pull, which is when he gets into a team, he doesn't seem to be the guy who tries, I mean, Liquid was trying this recently, to just play all the maps and then just kind of like work your way to where. No, he'll try and just be really cynical and get a couple he's going to pick, a couple more he's willing to play, and just work with those for the first couple of events and then use some of the map pull shenanigans and the veto stuff to potentially shore that up, make sure he just stays on these maps and dares people to pick certain maps. And in doing so, if you can get good on 3 to 4 maps really quickly, and you've got some good players, you have a chance to be good in very, very beginning, right out of the gate, without any sort of like time to build up to peak trajectory, like going step by step by step. No, this guy can just get you straight there immediately. And then obviously mind games with the younger in-game leader and the coach. Now, this is another sweep that could have been a sweep for the other team. It's a bit like the IM City ones, mega close, and it's a standing scenario. But how goated is Carrigan, boys? This is a prestige event now. We're using a stand-in and winning without dropping a map in the playoffs. This is impossible stuff. And in these playoff games, now you're swapping them out for Rain instead of Rops. So this is just, it's outrageous stuff. Oh, and by the way, shall I just throw this in there before we end? After this, they then go, and at the major, PGL Antwerp, oh, he only wins a major without a coach because Robban can't play because of the bog thing, and Inner Shine, the analyst, has to stand behind this. They win a major without a coach. Like, this guy is so insane at how he hits the ground running with a lineup, gets it functional, gets it to a better level or the best lineup they've been, or wins events. Then he has stand-ins. He's either getting way better at placing than he should, or he's playing the eventual champion, or he's just winning the event and beating the greatest teams of all time. Astralis, Liquid. This guy is so impossibly good in the short term and with standards. And let's be real, in all aspects. But in these areas especially, this is where normally when a lineup starts fresh, you give them a bit of time. Teething problems can occur. When you bring a new player, we've got to work him into the lineup. We've got to ingratiate him. We've got to integrate him into what we're doing. We're going to get him on the same page with our calling style and philosophy and map fit. No. Carrigan just gets work. He just gets straight to work and he gets the results.
I don't forget the people that support me. And in the case of this video, that would be Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Jason, Jensen Gore, Nikki, Tosh, Toucan, and you know who I'm always going to give the biggest shout out to, my boy Jerky's Minion. Do you want to ask a question for my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? Maybe you want to find out who the next guest is on one of my interviews that I've already recorded but not yet released. Or maybe you want to take part in one of those fabled long-form discussions where you get to decide the topics. With any of those perks or others tickle your fancy, simply click on the Patreon link in the description box below and put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today.